Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. 2019 is almost at an end, and so is the school year for Howard University. And tonight we're going to take a look back at the year that was and a look forward to 2020. And to do that, I'm joined by Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick. If you have comments or questions for Dr. Frederick, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Dr. Frederick, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I want to talk about the football coach, Rob Prince. But even before I do that, I want to get a better understanding of what your vision is for Howard University's athletic department more generally and more specifically for the football department.
Sure. First, I'd say that college athletics is becoming a complicated game. Embedded in that is are a lot of issues around how you finance these things. If you look at the Power Five conferences, the revenue streams they bring in are significant, but if you look across all Division I schools, there really are only a handful that actually make money off of college athletics. And that includes when you look at the scholarships that you give, et cetera. So at Howard University, it's a multi-million dollar investment for us at a loss. At a loss financially, but let me say that I think we don't speak enough about our graduation rate. And our athletes' graduation rate is about 82%, and I think that that's something that we have to celebrate and uplift more. We bring exceptional students to the university. I'm going to get a chance tomorrow morning to meet with one of them, a young woman on the women's volleyball team, who's a presidential scholar, has an incredible academic portfolio, and yet still is doing very, very good for the team. So these are the types of athletes that we bring, that we're proud of, that we want to promote. So our vision is to try our best to make sure that we compete on the field, but also recognize that our primary responsibility is to get these students an education. With respect to the football coach, we have an ongoing investigation into, complaints that were lodged, and, the athletic director put him on administrative leave for until we complete that investigation, and hopefully that will be completed soon and we can get that issue resolved. Having said that, again, we want the student athletes to be in a safe and encouraging environment and to be supportive. Coach Prince was hired last fall, and in the spring had the APR, which is looking at the academic progress of students and the retention rates and so on. Already had a major impact on that. The average GPA for the football team is one of the highest it's ever been. And so keeping those young men in class and keeping them focused is certainly important and certainly something that we're grateful for. How we go about doing those things as well is just as important, and we've got to make sure that we get all of that right. So the investigation will, lead us to an appropriate conclusion.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about selecting coaches for any athletic pursuit on campus, but more specifically about football, because I would arguably football and basketball are probably the highest profile sports. How do you vet a coach or the staff?
Yeah, there are lots of things that go in. We have some significant alum that are often in these arenas that we can call on. In some circumstances, we actually have alum who may have worked with the coach directly, either as a player to that coach or as, they're contemporary. And so we call on them We do reference checks, as anybody would do for any other jobs as well, in terms of checking with people that they've worked with. And sometimes we get unsolicited feedback as well and input, you know. And it was Al Gore, who was a coach at the University of Virginia, for instance. Michael London, who was a coach here. They all worked with Coach Pence as well. But the reality is you want to put a compendium of things together in which you can have a conversation around, you know, the pros and the cons. Everybody is not going to necessarily tick every box, but you want to do your best around that. And the primary thing that we have to make sure is that that person's value system and their goals are aligned with ours. And that's, you know, probably the biggest part of the vetting. We're not a Power Five conference. We're not, in a bowl conference. We're in FCS, and so we have to also be realistic about who we can recruit, et cetera. We have a certain limited number of scholarships versus the FBS teams that have 85 scholarships, all individual, not to be divided up. I mean, it's a very different, it's a wide spectrum of what coaches may be coming into. Some coaches may have a wealth of experience. Some you may be giving their first opportunity, as we've done with our basketball head coach, Kevin Blickney. You know, he has had experience as an assistant coach. Being a head coach at a Division I program is new for him. And so, you know, you look at that and the risk that that portends. But at the same time, you want to put the entire body of work together. He played on a Duke championship team in the 90s with Coach Krzyzewski and people like Grant Hill. And so all of those things are factors. So it's a very complicated, no two coaches look alike. No two coaches, you're going to use all the same criteria and weigh them with all the same point system, you know.
How important is winning, having a winning football team? Everybody likes, you know, a winner. And this hasn't been a good season. How do you balance the frustration of having a losing season with a university as a whole that has historically been a winning university academically and otherwise?
Yeah, you want to win. Let me be clear. I want great graduation rates, first and foremost, and I want student athletes to get a great academic experience. But it's also not a hobby, and I say this to the teams all the time. College athletics is a competitive arena, and so we want them to win, and we win. Right? We have lots of teams that win, and I think sometimes that gets overlooked. So if you look at our men's and women's tennis team, if you look at our women's volleyball team, you look at swimming and diving, track and field, we have lots of arenas in which we're winning. The women's soccer team have done an incredible job in the SWAC conference, as an example. Their coach has received awards. So we have lots of winning in the entire athletics department. Football and basketball are prominent sports in terms of what gets alumni attention, what gets national attention, media attention, and we recognize that as well. It is difficult to compete in those arenas just because of how competitive Division I is in those arenas and the kinds of resources that you have. And there certainly is a resource gap without a doubt. There's no doubt about that. And so we have been progressively investing so that we can win. In the first year as well, you have to recognize that you have new methods, new philosophy. You're trying to get, you know, the players to to adapt, to change. It's also one recruiting cycle. So you have lots of freshmen, they're younger. That coach, you know, over time is going to bring in his or her players. And, you know, you've got to give them an opportunity as well to kind of develop their team. And, you know, I would say that takes sometimes 2 to 3 years based on the players they may have inherited, based on the players they're bringing in, the ones who work out, who don't. And so, you know, today we live in a fast-paced world, so
indeed,
we want results yesterday. But the reality is a lot of these things are built over time, you know.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick about the year that was and also what is ahead for 2020 at Howard University. If you have a comment or a question for Dr. Frederick, please give us a call. Again, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to talk a little bit about, I want to kind of go back and look at, you know, 2019. You know, certainly there were, you know, a lot of ups and downs, you know, for the university, and the university remains one of the, if not the highest profile HBCU in the country. What things stood out the most for you in 2019?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure about ups and downs. I saw a lot of ups. In terms of what we've been doing, we launched our strategic plan. I think that is the right direction for the university, and starting to get that strategic plan implemented is critical. We closed our books once again with a positive bottom line. This will be the third consecutive year that the hospital also has had a positive bottom line. WMC just put out statistics. Howard is number one in sending African Americans to medical school from its undergrad campus, so we continue, you know, to lead there. We have three students who will be interviewing as Rhodes finalists the Saturday before Thanksgiving. I think that's again another major victory. We had a very strong commencement and have now clocked in a graduation, 4-year graduation rate above 50% for the first time in the university's history. I think, again, that's heading in the right direction. We've closed on a couple of multi-million dollar gifts, which we have an opportunity to announce in a few weeks. Our Bison STEM Scholar Program is now in its third cohort of students, 94 students. Average GPA is around 3.8. Average SAT score is just under 1,400. Absolutely exceptional, phenomenal students. We brought on some new chairs in the Department of Political Science, as an example. Donna Brazil is in her second year as the Gwen and Colbert King endowed chair. The programming around which has been phenomenal. Representative Cummings unfortunately passed, but he held that chair for 2 years in a row and actually participated on campus even earlier this year. And, you know, so when I look at the body of work and what we've been doing as a university, where we are, where we're trending, what our outcomes look like, what the young men and women who are coming in, the alternative spring break they had this past spring, and what that looks like. When I look at the achievements of the faculty in terms of research and other placements and awards, in terms of their engagement with funding agencies like the National Science Foundation and the associations, the professional associations in their field, that they are being tapped to either lead or participate at high levels. You know, I see a university on the move upward, steady and strong, and as we get our resources aligned with our priorities, I continue to see, you know, ongoing strength. And I think where we have challenges, we're making sure that we turn those into opportunities as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's critical that we keep focused on our priorities, and we keep investing in what makes us great, and that's our students and our faculty.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick about the year that was and the year coming up. Give us a call if you have a comment or a question. Maria, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Maria. What's on your mind? Oh, we lost Maria. Okay. You mentioned challenges. What would you say are some of the biggest challenges?
I think some of the biggest challenges are recognizing that despite the fact that we have a private university, 60% of our students coming in a freshman class, and when you look at the entire body of students, it's anywhere from 45% to 60% are Pell Grant eligible. I think that's a challenge. When you look at the fact that less black men apply to medical school in 2014 and in 1978, we are in the epicenter of a crisis. And I say the epicenter because we are producing more and also sending more than anyone else. So we have to try to continue to close that gap. I think that's a challenge. As you look at the neighborhood around us, is gentrifying. And what that means for the campus is also critical. So I just left a meeting with ANC commissioners, you know, from Ward 1 and a couple from Ward 5. And from the civic associations in the neighborhood as well. I think it's important that we maintain that line of communication and that we have ongoing conversations so that we meet that challenge. When you look at healthcare outcomes in the city, it's a challenge. And I think that those big issues, income inequality, healthcare disparities, food insecurity, climate change, those are the big questions of the day for our society, and they're the big questions that Howard has a challenge to meet the answers to. Some of those are right here in our backyard. If you're a black male in Ward 7 or 8, your life expectancy is some 20 years less than if you were a white woman in Ward 4. That's problematic. That says that we have a significant gap in what's happening in the city, and Howard needs to be part of the solution. So I think that there are challenges around, you know, us thriving that we can meet because I think they have opportunities, but there are also challenges around the bigger questions as well.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick about the year that was and the upcoming 2020 academic year. If you have a comment, if you have a question, certainly give us a call. I need to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk to Lamar calling from Hyattsville. Lamar, do not hang up. We will get to your phone call in just a bit, so please stay with us. You will be able to hear the program. And the lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. But this conversation continues on Sirius XM, Channel 141 in just a few seconds. Stay with us.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are talking about the year that was here at Howard University, 2019, and the year ahead, 2020. I'm sitting with Dr. Wayne Frederick, President of Howard University of Lyons. If you have a question or a comment, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's talk to Lamar calling from Hyattsville. Lamar, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I wanted to...
Whoops, we lost you. Lamar, call us back if you have an opportunity, and we will definitely take your phone call. Dr. Frederick, you were talking about your meeting with the, you know, with the ANC. Certainly the community, you always say Howard is a, it's a city campus. It's an urban campus. It is in the middle of arguably the greatest city on the planet. And you mentioned gentrification. How has that relationship changed, those kinds of meetings? I'm sure this isn't the first time that you've met with the community. Yeah. Has it changed? Has how you've had to present the university and deal with the changing community different?
Yeah, I think it has changed. I think this community has known Howard University, you know, for over 150 years. these meetings now, some of it is educating the community members about Howard University. And I don't think we can take that for granted or take that lightly. Right? We have to reposition that dialogue and make sure that we're clear to the community about who we are, how long we've been here, what we are about, and, you know, to keep reemphasizing that as the changes occur. A significant number of those of their membership are still Howard alum. And so, obviously, we have help there in terms of their being able to tell the story. But I think it's important that they hear directly from the university as well, so they understand what our stance is on certain issues and, you know, how we're going to manage town and gown issues that are going to come up at any given time. I mean, the way the system, for instance, in the city around the campus master plan is one in which the ANC commissioners have a role to play in approving the campus master plan, as an example.
Really?
Yeah, that's correct. So you have to participate in terms of letting them know, you know, what it is we're doing and why we're doing it and stuff like that. And they've been collaborative to their credit, and we appreciate that. We appreciate that, you know, they're willing to come to the table and discuss the issues and hear us out and understand what we're trying to do.
Back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. Cheryl, calling from Upper Marlboro. Cheryl,
hi.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay, good. I was calling. I just couldn't hear what the caller prior to me was, but I wanted to bring up the fact I heard you, President Frederick, about the gentrification. And I remember back in the spring where the new residents wanted to turn the yard into a doggy park. And so I wanted to know if there were any updates. I did read your response to the incident back in the spring, but I just wanted to find out because, of course, we were outraged when they said if we didn't like it, we should just leave and move.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask that, and then I'll hang up and listen because I think I can hear a little better
okay.
from the radio.
Thanks for calling. So again, I just want to reset this issue because social media sensationalizes these things in such a way that I think sometimes, you know, what comes out of it is not appropriate. So a white woman who lives in the neighborhood came on campus with a dog. I'm not sure where specifically on the campus she was. She did put out a question on a blog. She also did reach out to our community office as well to inquire as to whether we had a closed campus or not. And we obviously have an open campus. As a matter of fact, 6th Street is a public street. Just to put that in context. Obviously, we don't want people on, the upper quadrangle with dogs that may, do their business on the yard and those types of things. We have students who lay out there, et cetera. So my letter encapsulated that. Having said that, I want to make sure that sometimes we keep perspective on what's really important. So that same day, because of all of the social media volume and people clamoring for a response as well, I responded with a public letter. On that same day, though, Harold, three black males in D.C., 16 years old, all three of them were shot. One of them died. All three of them came to our hospital. That's where I want to be responding to. That's the letter that I want to alert the community about, et cetera. And as life would have it, I gave the chapel sermon on Sunday. I came out of chapel, and we have an after brunch in Carnegie. And I came out of Carnegie, and there was a black family there, mom, son, daughter, and a photographer. I'm not sure if he was related to them, and they were taking pictures, and they had a dog with them, right, on the yard, you know. And again, without the social media outrage, you know, that situation, you know, was appropriately handled. My point being that I think nobody ever said they wanted to turn it into a doggy park. But again, people with dogs need to be alerted that that's not what we expect for them to bring their pets on the yard. However, we also have to be recognized that you may have students coming to campus now who may have service dogs.
Ah, okay.
Right? So there are all those types of factors. And so we want to make sure that we're, you know, keeping open minds and open dialogue about these issues because of all of the different, you know, factors that are embedded in them. And also making sure that everybody is clear. Now, the person who put out a message saying that, you know, Howard should just move, that person was obviously, you know, very a singular point of view, which was not repeated or supported by anyone else that was engaged in that dialogue that is actively involved in the ANC or in any of those issues. So just to be clear about that as well. And we recognize that that element does exist. We're not going to fool ourselves that, you know, this is a utopia and everybody's going to be understanding. And so we're going to stand strong and make sure that the university, our legacy, our history, and what we're about is not disrespected. But at the same time, I also want to caution us to not, you know, kind of just run off and these 140 character, you know, type of things that happen with tweets and stuff, unfortunately, are not good places to resolve or discuss issues. And this is kind of what happens from that. And so these issues grow and are, you know, painted by the media in a way that's just not accurate all the time.
You mentioned, you know, the hospital. There have been business reports that there were discussions, even informal discussions, about moving Howard University Hospital. Can you clarify that for us?
Yeah, so the discussion really was about our campus master plan. Like I said, we have to discuss. And that campus master plan is approved over a 15-year period of time. Our responsibility is to let the ANC partner with us to understand what we're working on, et cetera. And that's the Advisory Neighborhood Commission. Part of that discussion involves futuristic thinking about the campus and about what, you know, could be down the road 10, 15 years. Right now, we have no hard plans covering this issue. My real estate team showed a video to the ANC members. Someone apparently came in there and took a still picture of one screenshot in the video and then put out a story that we're moving the hospital and, you know, building a 10 million square foot, I think is what the story said. And that led to enough, you know, a series of media inquiries. The reality is that our hospital was built in 1971. We would love to replace it with a new facility to deliver healthcare in this, in a contemporary fashion. You do need a facility that can do that. Where that hospital is sited, in and around our campus is, obviously up for discussion and something that we still need to work out, et cetera, and we don't have firm plans around that, and that's where we are.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick about all things Howard University, particularly this past year and the year ahead. You mentioned, Dr. Frederick, about Howard Forward and the strategic plan for the university. Arguably, this is could be considered one of the most muscular and energetic, if you can apply that to a document or a philosophy about the university. What's the thing that has surprised you the most about Howard Forward since its introduction?
You know, I wouldn't say surprised. I think I have been warmed by its reception, by the community, as in the Howard community's embrace of it, by the willingness for people to step up and bring initiatives that fall into it. The schools and colleges are working on their own strategic plans and how they could align with Howard Forward, how they can have initiatives under each pillar. And I think all of that is great for the university because ultimately, while we have the broad umbrella of the plan, the initiatives that underpin it really must be organic and must be of the people, as it were, so that we are fulfilling the mission of the university and ultimately the vision forward for the university as well. And I think that that energy, while not surprising, has been, you know, heartwarming.
Mm-hmm. What do you expect the flexibility and the effervescence of this Howard Forward plan to change again as we move into 2020? Or do you think it'll pretty much remain the same?
I think it must change. One of the things that a strategic plan, I think, should do in a contemporary experience is evolve. Because as issues come up, they're going to change. As circumstances come up, some of those things are going to change. And you have to have a plan that's living and breathing. And so the effervescence is maintained by the fact that you're constantly refreshing, reassessing, and then recommitting where appropriate to plans that you laid, and doing it well enough that some of those plans then become obsolete because the goals are fulfilled and now you need to move on to the next phase of doing that. And so it's good to see the energy around it. I anticipate that as we get into 2020 and beyond, the reality is society is also changing and we can't lose sight of that. And higher ed is going to change. The status of the economy may change. All of those things are things that we are going to have to react to. I think how we deliver higher education today is something that's not going to be similar in the next 10 years. Right? I think working with industry, some of the things that we've already started doing in terms of workforce development around Howard West and Howard Entertainment, the direction that industry, I think, is going to embrace. And has embraced with the Howard University already, but all of higher ed is going to have to come to that. People are questioning the value proposition of higher education. So we have to deliver in a contemporary experience a return on investment. And I think the university is doing that. I think the plan allows us to do that in the most excellent fashion. And as a result, I think all the constituents around us, you know, will respond to that appropriately.
One of the things that came up this year, specifically during the Congressional Black Caucus, is Congressional Black Caucus member and House Representative Alma Adams had spoken, not just this year, but she has a history of speaking about this, you know, the HBCU challenge and supporting HBCUs, not just monetarily, but getting businesses to understand what HBCUs are about, not just the Howards, but if I blaspheme, the Hamptons and the the Morgans and the Morehouses and all of that. And Howard University has this partnership with Amazon. How does that work, and what is the benefit of that kind of partnership with arguably the biggest company in the world?
Yeah. So that's a great question. First, let me comment on Representative Adams. She formed an HBCU caucus, and I think that we need to give her as much credit for recognizing the importance. She attended an HBCU, she taught at an HBCU, and therefore I think when you look in the halls of Congress, she certainly represents the epitome of a champion for our institutions, and for that I am certainly very grateful. The issue of workforce development and HBCUs, so Howard Entertainment is a deal, a partnership that we've entered into with Amazon Studios. It will afford our students an opportunity to go out to Hollywood, be anchored by Amazon Studios. They will also partner with other studios as well, where the students will get an experience on an experiential experience, be taught by industry leaders and Howard faculty. The great thing about that is it also gives the faculty an opportunity to come back and change their curriculum as well. And it gives the students an opportunity to see the inner workings of that industry. Now, we'll send students from School of Communications, Business School, and Fine Arts to start with. We intend to add law students as well. And so, this is the type of partnership I think is critical. As we did with Howard West, that's now Tech Exchange out at Google, we expanded that and added HBCUs and Hispanic serving institutions. That opportunity that we opened up to our brother and sister schools, I think is exactly what Howard should be about. We should lead, and then we should also make sure that we're creating opportunity for others. And so we will certainly, as this relationship matures, we will certainly add other HBCUs as well, and they will certainly benefit from this experience.
Well, if Amazon comes out with a Howard University movie, who plays Dr. Frederick?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
is it Denzel or is it?
It might be more Kevin Hart.
very good, Dr. Frederick.
and I should say I've met Kevin Hart. I think a lot of his work. But on a serious note, a Howard movie is a movie that should be told. I gotta be honest. I'm not sure they need to necessarily include my presidency, but I really think the history of Howard is a fascinating story that should be chronicled in that genre. And we've had some incredible presidents that have preceded me, and I think that the work that they've done, the role they played in society, I think would be great to document. We've had incredible movements on this campus that have spoken to bigger societal issues. So I think that that's another great opportunity. And we've also had incredible faculty and students who've gone on to be alum. I mean, this year has been a difficult year for us in terms of losing prominent alum. But when you think of Toni Morrison, Jesse Norman, Representative Cummings, Dr. LaFall, Kane Hope Felder. I mean, we really have produced on this campus people who have affected, impacted, and changed American society. And that's, I think, a story worth telling. And you bring up a good point. The secondary agenda with, Howard Entertainment is that we would get an opportunity to produce our own content. Because I think that there are stories that need to be told in the African-American experience that need to be embraced and told fully and told in many different media settings. And so not just movies, but, they're documentaries, they're podcast opportunities. I mean, you name it in terms of, especially when you look at the media assets we have on this campus with a radio station, a TV station, we really have an opportunity, I think, with this project, to get to that point where we're producing content. And Amazon Studios clearly has a platform that could lead to that. So, I think we've been thoughtful about getting into this partnership, and there are lots of long-term opportunities.
Well, and that's the other side of that, and I'm sure you, either directly or peripherally, have seen this report about black Facebook workers writing this open letter to the company where they say we're treated every day as if we do not belong here. That is in stark contrast to this Amazon partnership that Howard University has, where not only it appears that Howard University and its students and its culture and belong with this corporate entity, but then you have another equally large corporate entity, if not larger, where blackness is, at best, questionable. As is it? Does it blend? And I think you've got the Howard University Amazon example, which is what we want to see. But the bigger thing is that it seems that the world, the more the world changes, the more it kind of stays the same when you talk about black culture as part of the broader culture.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. And let me be clear, I don't think any of these companies, you have this right. I want to be clear about it as well. I mean, we've worked with Google and we've worked with Amazon, and working with Amazon now, and they clearly are earnest about trying to solve the problem, but I think they also will admit to you that they're nowhere close to having, you know, really solved this problem. We have a responsibility as Howard University to make sure that that's part of what we bring to this discussion, that we are sensitive to those issues. We're sensitive to immigration policies and sensitive to these corporations' stance on those issues. Being at the table affords us an opportunity to make that known and to try to influence those things as best as possible. The two companies we, you know, Google and Amazon have demonstrated to us an earnest interest in trying to solve those problems. And also they've been earnest in acknowledging that those are areas that they have to do, you know, much better in. And so we certainly are committed as well to bringing that, you know, experience and that opportunity to it. And I think, again, that's another significant upside of a partnership like this. You know, they will, it's one thing to talk about what you could do and to try to recruit and to, it's another thing to have a partnership with an institution like Howard where you're seeing it up close and up front every single day and you're interacting with and partnering and getting the influence, from that opportunity on what you're doing.
Earlier, I mentioned ups and downs, and you spoke to the down specifically that I was speaking about was the loss of Howard alums. I mean, those are some of the more, you know, high profile. Yes, we are proud of these members of our Howard family, but admittedly, these are downs. I mean, you know, the Jesse Norman. And I'll give you an example. It's almost gotten to the point now for me as a news person, whenever a great African American passes, the first thing I do is put their name in and then I put Howard University. Mm-hmm. Because the chances that they were graduates or had some connection to Howard University is very, very great. And while I did not know that Jesse Norman attended Howard University, but when I put it in and I said, but of course. Now, I knew Congressman Cummings exceptionally well and had heard his Howard University story endless times because he talked about it publicly and privately. But again, you know, that's we've lost the university is losing its magnificent senior brain trust.
Yeah, and that's a very, I think that's a very poignant point. Now, I see it also as an opportunity, though, right? It's an awakening because it is giving us pause to stop and recognize that those who have gone before us and have laid the path, blazed the trail, we have to honor them in a contemporary experience. And I think with Representative Cummings in particular, we really grabbed that opportunity. He was here for 2 years in the role of the endowed chair for the Gwendolyn and Colbert King endowed chair. And so students got to interact with him. Faculty got to interact. I mean, it was special. And the fact that that happened just a couple of years ago speaks to that type of activity. So I think that's instructive to us that we have to continue to push for making sure that there are more engagement and interactive points like that. It also is an awakening from the fact that have we chronicled these experiences well? Have we archived their experiences well? Have we engaged with them well? And certainly we could do more there. And I think it's an opportunity as well. When I look back and you ask yourself the question, when was Jesse Norman was on Howard's Board of Trustees? So again, I think the university, you know, a long time ago recognized her value and took it to a different level and had her on the board. I got a chance to interact with her as a result of that. After her board tenure, you look at Toni Morrison, who I had the opportunity to go meet in my role, you know, as president, because I wanted to meet prominent alum like her to find, to hear from her directly what the university meant to her, and how that engagement worked. And, you know, we had preliminary conversations about Indulgia and her name as an example. So to meeting and interacting with these elders, I think is critical for a younger generation. I think chronicling what they've done is critical. I also think, though, it's also an opportunity to start making sure, and I shouldn't say start, but to ensure that the next generation is taking on that mantle of leadership and recognizing that we all collectively have a responsibility to honor their legacy by moving the needle that much further along. And also at the same time, by holding them up while they're here and expressing our love and appreciation for them while they're here as well. And I think that that's something that, in my role as president, I've tried to be purposeful about. When you look at our honorary degree recipients, every year I've tried to honor a Howard alum and or a former faculty member, because I think we should be recognizing them in a contemporary fashion. And in doing so, it gives us an opportunity to tell their story and to make sure that our students see and hear from them as well. And so that's something that we are going to continue to do, but we obviously need to broaden, recognizing that especially that generation was a very, very special generation, mm-hmm. generation that did not have opportunity elsewhere. Were granted opportunity here and seized it by yes. the color and made the most of it and set an example for all of us to follow. And so we are certainly going to continue to look for, you know, more means and mechanisms to continue to honor that service.
I think that's a good place to end this conversation, Dr. Frederick. Happy 2019, a good 2020 to you. To you and your family, and I will see you next year.
It went a little too fast, but I'll take that.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much. That is Dr. Wayne Frederick, president of Howard University. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, October 12th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.